First of all, a little background. When Reb David Leibowitz, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, came to America in the 20s, there was virtually, kemat, nothing going on. There were no real yeshivas, a couple of lower elementary, maybe one or two high schools. Out of town was virtually nothing doing. He actually became the first Rosh Yeshiva in America because Torah Vadas then wanted to start a Beis Medrash, and they chose him to be the Rosh Yeshiva. He stayed there for 8 years, maybe something like that, and then in 1933, he started his own yeshiva. And the landscape then was dismal in terms of learning, in terms of Chashivus HaTorah. It didn't exist. In terms of some religious people, there were, obviously, but it was very, very weak. It was before the day school movement. Torah Masorah only started in the mid-40s when there was Dr. Joe Kamenetsky traveled every other Shabbos in another community around the country to organize the building of day schools. In the 20s and even in the 30s, there was very little doing here. Yet this Torah giant, a product of Radin, the Chofetz Chaim, who we learned with for 2 years, B'chavrusa, I think from 15 to 17, they learned Hilchos Sukkah in the preparation for the Mishnah Berurah. What the Rosh Yeshiva used to say is that they learned from 9 in the morning to 9 at night, and for 2 years. And then with Reb Naftoli, maybe for another 2 years. I think by 19 already he was off to Slabodka. And when Reb Naftoli sent him to Slabodka, he said he was a fartik lamden. He was already a finished product, a finished lamden. And he spent many years in Slabodka and then so forth. He ended up coming to America on a shlichus for the koilel that the Alta had. And he ended up staying here. The Chofetz Chaim recommended that he stay. The story goes that the Chofetz Chaim told him that Torah was given in a midbar, and therefore America, even though it was a midbar shmoma in terms of Yiddishkeit, and here this man came. He couldn't speak the language, spoke Yiddish. There was very few people to talk to. In Yiddish there were people to talk to, but in terms of Torah there was very little going on. There was some big rabbonim, but the level of Shmiras HaMitzvahs was appalling. Chilul Shabbos and Taras HaMishpocha. I mean, these things were in terrible array. Kashrus was hefker, and here he comes, and he has this vision. He's going to spread Torah all over America. There isn't going to be a community that doesn't have Torah yeshivas and lomdei Torah and he meant it. He meant it, and he wasn't dissuaded by the fact that he had a lot of obstacles. He was very realistic in terms of the opposition that existed. He had bizyonis when he came to raise money for the yeshiva. A bunch of parasites, what are you doing? He came, went to Florida to raise money, and the mamish people wouldn't open the door, and when they did, they didn't have a good word to say. And this man was nothing fazed him. He's going to build Torah in America. He's going to do everything he can. And this, I think, is a critical ingredient. He's not going to build it with compromises, and he's not going to build it with children. Meaning, he's going to produce Talmidei Chachomim, Lomdim, Balei Musar, Balei Midas, people who have taken on the gadlus and the message of Slabodka that he brought to these shores, and he's going to recreate this here. I'm sure people thought he was out of his mind. And these people are going to go out, and they're going to be able to bring Torah to all over the United States. Shortly after, just as a backdrop to give you a little sense of what went on, after he passed away, there was a meeting of Rabbonim because they decided, previously there was the RCA, which was the YU Rabbonim, And then there was the Agudas Rabbonim, which was the old European Rabbonim that had the Yoden Smicha. And there was no like organization for the Rabbonim that were being produced by the yeshivas. They gave them smicha after a couple of years of learning, and they would go out. They were religious. They were frum. It was, you know, the frum yeshivas, but not necessarily producing real talmid chachomim who learned for 8, 10, 12, whatever it years or more. And they wanted to make an organization for these rabbonim, so they shouldn't have to be part of the RCA, and they couldn't be part of the of the Agudas Rabbonim, because they didn't qualify, they didn't have real smichas or the yore yore yoden yoden. And the Rosh Yeshiva went to this meeting, and he was a young man, and he stood up against everybody there. The greatest gedolim were there, and he just bluntly just said, he says, my father was against this. He says, my father believed that to be a rov in America or to be a rov any place, a person has to be a giant Talmud Chochem, and he has to have learned many, many years Torah and Musa, and have worked on himself with Musa to achieve great levels of personal perfection. And unless he's done that, he's disqualified. He doesn't qualify to be a leader in Klal Yisrael. And allowing such leadership to take place will create a churban. And he didn't back down. In fact, one of the rabbonim there was very openly critical of him. He said, you know, no, if his father was here, we'd be able to talk to him. But, you know, he's just saying over from his father, so, like, we can't argue with him. But they didn't take it seriously, unfortunately. But this was it. He instilled that in his son, and he was fanatic about it. This is what has to be. They came to him and with a very interesting proposal. They said that there are people are assimilating, Jews are drifting, they're not keeping Shabbos, the matzav is terrible. Let's send the guys out younger, and they'll be able to be makarev, you know, who knows, hundreds, thousands of people. And why wait so long? It's true, when you wait long, you'll have a stronger product, but we're losing lives every day. So maybe let, you know, change your approach and let the chevra go out. And some people actually came to him. Some of his own Talmidim came with this taina because they saw others that went with this principle and were doing it. So what is quoted that he said is, he said that Chazal say, Ein mevatlan tinoike shel beis rabim afilu lebinyan beis hamikdosh. That even if Eliyahu HaNovi will come and say, I need your help. Let's be mevatel the cheder. I need them to help me come and rebuild the Beis HaMikdosh. So the halacha is no. Tinoge shel beis rabim. You're not mevatel. The world stands on their learning. You can't do it. He said, imagine the hashpah the Beis HaMikdosh would have. Imagine what the world would, how the world would look different if the Beis HaMikdosh would be rebuilt. And the whole hashpah of everything. He says, but no. The world stands on them, even for the binyan beis hamikdash. And then he said, "What's a tino shel beis rabon?" He says, "No, that you have to ask your rebbe, you know." And that, I guess, he held that these young American chevra who had only learned a little bit were more akin to tinoike shel beis rabon than to people that can really go out to. But he was the strength. It's amnishtoimim. Sometimes when I think of it, there was nothing going on in the world. And everybody was antagonistic to this concept, and he just, you know, he wouldn't budge. He had that inspiration, I guess, from the Chofetz Chaim and from the altar, that this is the only way. And Baruch Hashem, he succeeded with many Talmidim that he had. He didn't have a big yeshiva, but even in his Torah Vedaste, some of his, some of his Talmidim continued on. Rav Pam was a Talmud of his and continued on to be the Rosh Yeshiva in Torah Vedas and one of the leading Gedolim and others. But this vision of not compromising this concept of Gadlus in Torah and Gadlus in Musar was a very, very powerful vision. Also, he suffered enormously. Poverty was their middle name. once when one of the Rosh Hashivas, I think it was Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky, there were two meetings, once Rabbi Yosef Farber and one Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky. I think this is the one with Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky came to America also on Shlichus for the Kollel, and Rabbi David was already here, and he asked him, he says, you know, what's the story with America? What's so Rabbi David told him like this. He says, Parnosa, he says, you don't have, there were times they poshut didn't have bread to eat in the house. He says, but Ruchnius, yeah, everybody thought Gashmius in America. He said, Gashmius for us, there's no Gashmius. He says, they suffered enormously. They were Mesa Nefesh for Torah in a way that was beyond what we couldn't even imagine such a thing. But Ruchnius, he said, such Ruchnius, why? Because the opportunity to build, the opportunity to be mashpia, the opportunity to influence, the opportunity to be marbitz Torah, he says, that's the greatest. And he saw Ruchnius, where everybody else thought there was Gashmius, he realized there wasn't anything, but Ruchnius, and that was his attitude, that there's such, the opportunity to build was endless. Unfortunately, we know he wasn't zoichet to see too much of his peiros, so, you know, a few of his talmidim, but he passed away. After he started the yeshiva, he passed away, 8 years later, 1941. And but you know, min hashamayim, from Shomayim, I mean, he must see how his son eventually was matzliach to build the yeshiva, to grow the yeshiva, and to really implement so many of the ideas and the dreams and the visions that his father had, and having a network of Torah and Harbotzes Torah and Moises HaTorah all over the country. And that was really, and the Rosh Hashiva too was Moise Nefesh for that, with that vision in mind, his father's vision. It was like that was his guiding light, his impetus, his inspiration to be Moise Nefesh himself, because that dream that his father had, that vision that his father had. And not too many people share that vision. Many great people came here, many, not all. Some had, you know, Rabbi Aaron Kotler came with also that brin and that vision of building Torah in America. But some were ready to give up. They said, America, too much Gashmias, too much this, too much that. It's not, they're not. Not going to replant the Torah world of Europe. And of course, those that didn't accept that were zeicha to see. I mean, today you have networks upon networks of Mekumis HaTorah, Moises HaTorah, all over the country, all over the world. And it's all a response, it's all a factor of the vision that these visionaries had, that they refused under any circumstances to compromise. I just want to mention just a few other points which I think are very, very significant too. Reb David was very much into depth, iyun, depth, havona, analysis in learning, in musa, in analyzing oneself, the sincerity of one's motivations, the reality that confronts them. And his whole nature was against superficiality. And he used to say, you know, that a bucky, a person who knows a lot of information, not necessarily in depth, then a woman can come and ask him a shayla, and she sees, this guy's a giant. This guy's a genius. Look what he knows. He knows everything. He knows this. He knows that. He quotes from all over. A balavona, he says, an in-depth Talmud Chochem, you have to be down in the depth, in the trenches with him in order to appreciate him. So depth of Torah was not only was Torah not appreciated, excuse me, not only was Torah not appreciated in his day, but depth. That depth that he was used to, that depth that he saw in the Chofetz Chaim, that depth that he saw in Reb Naftali, that depth that he saw in the Alter and the Musa in Slabotka, the world was not was not into that, didn't appreciate that. But he believed that that's where it's at. The Torah is infinite. The power of Torah is infinite. But the Torah is, it's an in-depth science. It's not a superficial academic subject. And he was Mesa Nefesh for that concept. Everything he did was with tremendous amelus, with emphasizing that, with teaching that to his Talmidim, and without any willingness to compromise that on any front. Of course, we know that some of the other things that I think were also very... before we go there, Rabbi Zalke Gwertz used to tell a story how he took Reb Dovid to visit a certain Chassidus Rebbe in Williamsburg. And when he came out, he asked him, Voso Migaret, like, what was the conversation? So he said, the Rebbe said, Isfeld Yerushalayim, the world is lacking Yerushalayim. That was his analysis of the problem. And he says, and what did the Rebbe say? What did Rosh Yeshiva say? What did Reb Dovid say? So Reb Dovid said, I told him, Isfeld Torah in the Welt. What's lacking in the world is not Yerushalayim. What's lacking in the world is Torah. And I don't know to this day, and I don't know anyone who does know, maybe they do, maybe, but I don't know who said it, whether it was Reb Dovid who said it or Rabbi Gwertz who said it. He said, Yerushalayim? In the cloister, you also have Yerushalayim. In other religions, they also have Yerushalayim. They're a God-fearing people. But Torah, that only exists by Klal Yisrael. That musag of a Dvar Hashem that came, that Hashem revealed at Har Sinai and gave to us and was faithfully passed down from generation to generation, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu guarantees lo yisi shochach mi pizaroi, and guarantees that the Torah continues on from one generation to the next without a hefsik, and Hashem gives siyata d'shmaya ki Hashem yitein chochmo mi piv dasu svuno, and that's a way of life. That's what life is about. That's the purpose of creation. That tells you how to act in everything you do in life. And what I like to add to it recently is just one dimension. And that dimension is that life is confusing. And sometimes, oftentimes, many times, we don't know what to do. We have a unique gift that was given to us at Har Sinai. A Torah Shebichsav and a Torah Shebalpeh, which has to this very day, for every generation and for every individual, the directives of how to live his life. And if following that, he can always know he's doing the right thing, the best thing, and the ultimate good will come out. Now, on one level, it exists in deeper things in terms of Ramozim in the Psukim. They asked the Goyin, where is he found? So he showed them which parsha his merumas. That's something else. But on a very simple level, and that is that we know that when we follow the Torah directives, when we follow the Das Torah, in every decision we make and everything we do, then Hashem is guiding us as to what's right. And all that was given at Har Sinai, and it's a davar poshut to me that all of that was part of the kavona of the Nesinas HaTorah, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw all the future generations and knew how every single halach and every single das Torah and every single halachic perspective is going to guide each and every generation and each and every individual. So this is, there's such a sense of Chashivus HaTorah. There was something else which I think is worthy of mentioning too. Integrity, emes. When there's depth of learning, there's integrity of character. Because the pursuit of truth and learning sends a constant, ongoing message to a person that I gotta know what's right, I gotta know what's true. I can't fool myself. And when I can't fool myself in a Gemara, in a Tosfos, then I can't fool myself in a Midah or in a Hanhoga as well. The Rashiva used to say a little different. They used to say that when the office was upstairs and the Beis Medrash downstairs, he said, what we do in the office, the way we conduct our business in the office, is mashpia on the Beis Medrash downstairs, because that integrity permeates the entire environment. And that integrity was honesty, and an integrity was loyalty to the directors of the Torah. And it was at all costs. The famous story that everybody may know, but it's an extremely powerful story. And the fledgling yeshiva, which didn't have very much going for it other than a giant of a Rosh Yeshiva with a vision and a passion and a Mesiras Nefesh that was off the charts. But there was a cook. The cook, the steinit, was not so clean. And it annoyed some of the chevra there that, and they wanted Reb David to get rid of the cook. And he refused. She was an almona, and he held that he had no right to do it. And he held no right to do it, so the Rosh Yeshiva started to talk to him. He says, all the chevra are going to leave. He says, the whole yeshiva is going to leave. You're not going to have any talmidim. He says, that's not my business. It's the Rabbeinu Shalom's world. If I'm supposed to ask her to leave, that's what I do. But if I hold, he held, he paskened, that he didn't have the justification for an almona, there's almost like a different Shulchan Aruch for dealing with an almona and Yosemim. It goes beyond Shulchan Aruch for normal people, because they have, they're alone, they have terrible matzav. So he says, if it's not the proper thing to do, okay, I'm not the balabos in the world. If the Rabbeinu Shalom wants Torah in the world, it'll be. And if he doesn't want it, there's nothing I could do. I have to just do what's right. And he stood up against everyone. And if Rosh Yeshiva tried as a young man, you're going to lose it all. So I'll lose it all. Not my business. I have to do what's right. And that level of integrity that permeated the learning and the Musa, and the Hashkofa, and the Hanhoga, and the business dealings was something truly, truly amazing, and I think extremely inspiring. And when it came to truth, there was another dimension of truth, which I think was also very special. The Gemara says that there was an Amora that said he's not anywhere near his father's Madrega, because his father waited 24 hours between meat and milk, and he only waits 6. So they asked the Kasha, so an Amora can't wait 24 hours. You're not on your father's level. So wait 24 hours. Marash, what's your problem? So I don't know if this is from Reb Dovidov in the Alta, this Vort, but he said, his father was on that level. With his father, it was real. It was with he was on the level, and the sincerity and the Taras HaLev that went into that was complete and pure, and therefore it was appropriate. It's Lifnei Mishuras Adin. If Adin, you have to do whether you're on the level or not. Adin is Adin. But this is only Lifnei Mishuras Adin. He says, for me to have done it, would have been a charade. I'm not doing anything. I'm waiting 24 hours, but I'm not on that level. So it's empty. And again, the integrity, the honesty of my personality, of my hanhoga, of the way I feel, of the way I think, of the way I act, and just this the truth. It was like, how could you do that? It's not real. And this was such a, and all of this permeated the whole atmosphere. I just want to mention one more thing. The Rosh Yeshiva always used to talk about his father's bitochen. He used to talk to his father. Nothing fazed him. He had a terrible situation. Originally started his own yeshiva right smack in the middle of the Depression, didn't have any source of income. He had to do everything himself. He was the secretary and the Rosh Yeshiva and the Mashgiach, and I don't know if he was the janitor too, maybe. But I mean, and one problem after another problem, and his health problems too. You know, he passed away. He was 52 years old. He was a young man. He was sick the last 2 years or something of his life. But he relied on the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. He has to do what's right, and the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is the balabos of the world, and it's not my problem. And that he says it was such a source of strength, and it was an inspiration, you know, to the Rosh Yeshiva. And when he passed away, the Rosh Yeshiva was obviously devastated. You lose your father. He was a young man. His father was 52, he was 23. It was his responsibility to take over a yeshiva with debt and problems and you know, not, you know, in difficult times as well. But he had this sense of mission. He's going to continue his father's mission. But he did get a very special chizuk, and I think it's something that it's kedai to be aware of. He says when he was sitting shiva for his father, so Reb Moshe Feinstein came to be Menachem Oval, and he told him something which I think carried the Rosh Yeshiva and inspired him for years to come. He told him, because here he's bereft of a father, such a giant of a father, and everything is on him now, and he doesn't know what to do. He was, you know, like, you know, where to begin, where to end, and he had some chevra there. They didn't have many, but they had a number of real giants, Eluyim, and this, and you know, it wasn't so easy to run that yeshiva. And Reb Moshe told him, he says, one thing you should know, that in Shemayim, your father could do more for you than he could do on this world, from up there. And the Rosh Yeshiva always felt that the amazing siyata d'shmaya that he had, and the miracles shalei kederech hateva of his survival, and eventually, you know, there was a tkufa where he was ready to close up the whole yeshiva in the late 50s and whatever, early, late. And then everything that happened, he says, he actually felt that his father was doing, pulling strings up there for him. And that, you know, that used to keep him going. Anyway, so I guess on a day of a yortzeit, it's number one, it's a special schus for the nifter, when people are nisoyer and inspired by the example that he set. And certainly for us, this giant, this pioneer of Torah, this person who was meisa nefesh to the utmost, with a vision and a dream. No, it's more than a dream. It was a vision that he had for what has to be done, and nothing could deter him from that. That certainly should be an inspiration for us. Yehi zichroi baruch.